Il-ġurnata tajba, jien il-professur Rebecca Dalligonzi se nkun magħkom fuq il-programm jismu Vjaġġ Mar Żagħżugħ. Tal-programm qed niddiskutu nisa fil-kostruzzjoni, ġustizzja u ekwità soċjali. Kien hemm diversi mistiedna madwar din il-mejda, ukoll kien temi varji. Kienna nisa avukati li qed jaħdmu f'dan is-settur, kienna nisa li qed jaħdmu fis-settur ta' restawr, nisa wkoll periti li qed jaħdmu fuq proġetti li jibdew jitkellmu natura ta' ċerta intellettualità, mbagħad ovvjament isiru iktar b'mod kostruttiv meta niġu għad-disinn. Illum fl-istudio magħna għandna Dr. Sara Scheiber, li hija membru akademiku però wkoll membru ta' Department ħanajda bl-Ingliż Department of Spatial Planning and Infrastructure. Nirringrazzjak tal-ħin tiegħek. Għar-raġuni personali il-programm ħan nitkellmu bl-Ingliż wara din l-introduzzjoni qasira u mbagħad inkunu nistgħu nibdew ftit nitkellmu dwar ir-rwol tagħha, karriera tagħha, riċerka tagħha, ovvjament i fejn qed tasal u x'viżjoni għandha l-Malta meta niġu nitkellmu ftit fuq kostruzzjoni. Mela minn hawn il-qudiem ħa naqleb l-Ingliż. Mela. Good day. Nice to have you again, once again. Okay. I said it in Maltese, I'm saying it in English. So you have that twice. So, Sara, it's lovely to have you. We're looking forward to this discussion today. And I think it's a very good place to start with perhaps your research. So I'll leave that in your hands. Can you take on from
yes.
there?
Yes, okay. So maybe I can just say that, as you mentioned, I come from the Department of Spatial Planning and Infrastructure. My research area, my area of expertise, my work relates to urban design as a specialization,
urban design
and spatial planning.
You've been here for?
I've been now here back in Malta quite a while. I think now, yes, about 10 years or
10
so.
But originally
I graduated as an architect. However, I specialized straight away in urban design in the Netherlands at the TU Delft. It was always my interest. From when I started studying architecture, I was always very interested in the social impact of architecture.
Yes, and I think it revolves a lot around even your current research.
Yes.
I think you started off earlier on, but today you're implementing it here in Malta.
Yes, exactly. And that is where, in fact, I started to understand that if you really want to understand, you know, the social impact of architecture, you're looking beyond the building, you know, you're looking at everything actually that happens in between buildings and how these different aspects relate to each other.
Yes.
One thing I realized when I was living abroad, I lived in the Netherlands, I also lived in the UK, in Liverpool. And at the time, Liverpool was capital of culture as well. And over there, I realized the focus, and even while working, because after studying, I went on to work over there, the focus that certain projects, and there was a lot of regeneration going on, the focus on public space, the renewal of public space, the integration of public space and infrastructure, and how this is a crucial element and a crucial layer within our urban fabric and which really impacts our daily lives, basically.
Yes.
So that's, I think, where my interest started and my research continued on from this. When I came back to Malta, I started to work also within transport, and again I realized, you know, how important it is to understand and study our public spaces, and I mean that in a very general way, because public space incorporates a lot of different aspects, maybe not just the typical of what we understand as maybe a garden or or a playground, but actually everything that happens within that public space. And so, in fact, my research focused on the planning and design of urban open spaces, so open spaces that are within our urban environment, and how we can plan and design these in a way to contribute to sustainable development. And I studied this specifically in the Maltese context, because even though there are theoretical frameworks which are, you know, international, and design principles and planning principles which are international, at the end of the day, you have to apply them to a specific context and understand them within a specific context, especially when you think about planning and planning systems and communities, you know.
The dialogue as well between the space and the community.
Exactly. So I really wanted to try and understand, you know, the situation in Malta and try and understand how we can improve, you know, and make recommendations and proposals for moving forward and transforming our open spaces in Malta.
Our sector recently has come under different shades and different spotlights for this. Obviously, we've understand that the population is what it is and the demands on transport are what they are. Spaces are limited and so on. So I think the fact that ongoing research in this area is a priority for sure. But I think also looking at new interventions, maybe differences, a space that was left alone, derelict, and has now been converted to something where it's usable, people are using it, children feel safe. Can you relate to anything that you experienced and saw a change in?
Yes. I mean, when I first started carrying out my research, I think the fact that I was focusing on open spaces, there was very limited research, you know, at that time. I mean, now it's you know, I think I started my PhD, because my research is always ongoing, in 2014, if I recall. And, you know, at that time, there wasn't a big focus, let's say, as such. You know, there were some initiatives which were starting, but it wasn't high on the agenda. And that's where it was really important, one, to understand the existing situation, and two, to make recommendations of how we can be more proactive in planning our open spaces, because I think that was one of the things, and I say was because you do see change. I am seeing change, sort of. The lack of proactive planning in our open spaces, the fact that, like you're saying, there are a lot of leftover spaces. You mentioned the word limited space. We're used to thinking in those terms: Malta's small, Malta's overly developed, we have no space, you know. And in actual fact, there is a lot of unbuilt space. I think what is interesting is how it's allocated and how it is used. And this is where the potential lies, basically. You know, if we can, you know, just see things a little bit differently and maybe move beyond what we are used to seeing and what we are used to accepting. And there is where, you know, we're starting to see a change. And I think this change came about also from people wanting, you know, there was a certain demand. And I think the pandemic also had an impact on this, when we started to realize, you know, during lockdown and during, you know, these times, that we wanted, I think society started to feel and demand more open space. Because I think before, one of the things, in fact, that even came out of my research, because I dealt with a lot of different aspects, but through some of the methodologies and data collection, one of the challenges which came out are sociocultural tendencies. So the fact that we, maybe as a Maltese population, are not so in touch with nature and not used to, and maybe don't, you know, demand it actively, let's say, or, you know, in the same way that we demand and ask for other things.
Like a cultural trend.
And I think, and that's an important one to understand if you're trying to create change. But I think the pandemic helped in also changing. There was maybe a latent demand, you know, which started to come out, and maybe even there was this recognition that, you know, we need to, even from at a government level in the political agenda, that, you know, listen, actually, we need to start investing in our public space and our green spaces as an important form of public infrastructure, which is something I believe in a lot, you know, that it merits the same kind of attention planning as we do for other forms of infrastructure.
It's true. And for whoever is listening to the program today, one of the things I treasure the most about Sara is, believe me, you'll be walking in a piazza and you meet her, because she'll be there collecting data. It happened to me once.
Yes, it's true.
Our offices are near each other, but that also happened. So you are very much hands-on. You're very data-oriented. And I think what I admire in your work is that you like to be very much in touch, hands on the ground. You want to feel like what people are needing in terms of space and so on. So that I find is really, really admirable. So one of the things that I know, and we're going to talk about this later on in the second half, is the connection you have with the NGO. But I'll come to that a bit later on. So when that drive and that experience you gained internationally and moving back, and the application of that, of those thoughts, that research, how did it help you see Malta in a different way? Because that was a very interesting thing you just said, and I'd like to go back to it.
Yes, I think one of the things I experienced, and you're right, it is about experience. I mean, in every that's one of the things I used to love, and I always say it, you know, when I was working on different projects, when I worked abroad, you deal with cities, you know, projects in cities that you hadn't experienced, and one of the first things you had to do was just go there and experience the space to really try, you know, and get a feeling. I always say get a feeling for the space. My colleagues used to laugh at me, but I need that. But experiencing also living in different cities. So, I mean, one of the cities I loved living in is The Hague, for example. And I tell you why. I mean, many cities are
yes,
nice.
That's true. I confirm that.
But especially in the Netherlands, they have a way of bringing nature into the cities. I love living in a city. Some people love living in quiet residential areas. I love living in, you know, a dynamic urban life. But I also like that aspect that you can easily go to a park, you know, easily use your bike to cycle somewhere. And okay, the Netherlands is known for cycling, but this doesn't only happen. When I moved to Liverpool, I took my bike with me. And I, you know, I didn't have a car, you know. So, and whereas, you know, in the UK, it wasn't as you know, predominant to see people cycling around. Now it's changed also in London. You know, you had that. And you could easily get to places and you could easily go to a park. So you had sort of the best of both worlds. And to me, that was a real, like, eye-opener, you know. And to say, you know, even moving back to Malta, I was really trying to understand, but why, you know? I mean, we've got beautiful places, you know, and we're such a small, you know, really, it's like we're one big city. And that was one thing which occurred to me straight away. It's like we're one big city. And in reality, you know, sometimes we feel very far away from each other. And this was my, I don't know, my challenge, my, you know, sort of vision to say, you know, vision, we can. I wanted to understand, you know, how our open spaces could be different and, you know, why it is that we Malta is as it is, maybe, and we have the challenges that we have, but how we can move towards addressing these.
I think also a very wise point we can take from this is that it shouldn't be an afterthought. It's very, we've come to live by almost decisions that have been taken before us. We have a lot of heritage, and this came out in most programs that as engineers and designers and architects, we are challenged because we are constantly kind of building the marriage between the new and the the existing. But I think one of the interesting points is that we're also shifting towards appreciating nature even more and understanding that villages, towns, cities need an injection of spaces where people can rest, children can play, people can stop, read, you know. I think that has, that ideology now is there.
Yes.
It's there.
And one of the things which we lacked, and I think hopefully it's starting to change, was, which again came out through, you know, the research I did on my PhD, was the lack, let's say, of an entity which was responsible for proactively planning and implementing not just open space, but let's say planning and urban design. Because, you know, we have entities which are responsible maybe for regulating planning. We have entities which are responsible for regulating transport and implementing infrastructure projects. But never, at least before Project Green, which was recently sort of set up now, did we now we have a bit maybe of a clearer mandate, you know, which we can see, you know, and a certain intent. Before that, projects would happen at a very local scale. They still do, but you need to, and that's also good, but you also need to coordinate them. So I think that's a big difference between when you see certain planning that's happening with open spaces in cities abroad and what happens in Malta is that there isn't this integrated, I speak of an integrated approach to planning, where you look at different things together, you know, you look at a whole town center, you look at a whole locality, and you understand how the spaces and infrastructure and transport works together. And this, I felt, you know, it was something which was lacking. I mean, we lack certain strategic planning documents as well, you know, at a national or even at a local scale, when it comes to thinking about our open spaces.
Yes, yes. I think we have also to stop and reflect on the parts of the island that have worked successfully. Like you will find areas in Attard, Balzan, and Lia, that perhaps were originally intended to have gardens and spaces, and they were retained privately and possibly even public interventions retained them. So other places that perhaps are more new, let's take Swatar, for example, that might be more challenging because the development kind of grew very fast as well, you know, construction there just. So I think in areas where construction takes on very fast, perhaps that is where the time to develop what you're saying, the integrated planning, is required a little more.
Yes.
And I don't think it's just me and you saying this. I'm sure it's most of the population saying this, so it's nothing new here. But I think we have come to understand it more, and now we're taking it quite seriously.
Yes.
As in we, when I say we, I mean as a population, as, as a nation.
Yes, yes.
Kind of thing. Yes. Another very important point and very valid is that as we travel, and many of us do very regularly, we are exposed to what we like, what we see, new case studies, new options, and integrating them in Malta, it's becoming perhaps, is it, or maybe something you might wish to discuss, it's becoming easier, is it becoming more relevant, is it becoming less relevant? Is it the fact that we have, for example, climate impacts such as extreme temperatures and flash floods, which are two very, I would say, challenging sort of weather patterns, because high temperatures is something we could easily have 41 to 45 degrees in Malta, and the wind, you know, and flash flooding, which is sudden rain, also can leave its damage. So I think we're also looking at the impact of, or at least research-wise, I'm sure you are, looking at the impact of this. How does it feature in the context of integrated planning, spatial planning, resilience building? What is it about resilience that meets your mandate, the demands?
Yes. I mean, these challenges are precisely, you know, maybe we spoke a lot about, you know, maybe social and people in our context. But of course, there is that, you know, these bigger phenomena like climate change and things which we are experiencing, which other countries are experiencing as well, you know. Sometimes we might think we do tend to travel and go abroad, but sometimes we say, but then we come back to Malta and we say, but here it's different and our needs are different and in Malta it's different. The reality is there are similarities, even with dealing with increased temperatures, with increased rainfall. And in fact, the whole concept of talking about green infrastructure, maybe it sounds, it's a term, you know, which again is one of those terms, we need to break it down. What do we really mean by it? Like sustainability as well. And really what we're talking about is thinking about our open spaces in terms of networks, networks of green open spaces within urban areas or in a much, at a, you know, much a wider scale. And the idea here is that the infrastructure is seen in a more integrated way. So you are designing and planning in a way that you would achieve certain benefits. What do I mean? So for example, if we decide to integrate certain vegetation patches or planters, typically we might be used to seeing trees which are surrounded by a concrete curb, which doesn't allow, now the tree might provide shade, it might provide a habitat for biodiversity, so there you already have multiple benefits, but it doesn't allow water to infiltrate into the soil from, say, a hard paved area which is impermeable. And the same with planters. Very often we're used to seeing, you know, planters which are maybe raised and, you know, enclosed by low walls. This doesn't allow the multiple benefits, for example, of dealing with stormwater and the more we continue sort of designing and developing in this way, this is why we have the flooding that we have, because, you know, the water has nowhere to go. So it's almost like going back, reverting to nature and trying to understand green infrastructure is in fact also a nature-based solution, which is another term which is being used nowadays, to really look to nature and how nature, you know, is to find solutions for dealing with the challenges that, you know, we are dealing with because of the way we are inhabiting, you know, our...
And you remind me of something else. It's quite a challenge. Some pavements have these plastic drains that are breaking. And when you're walking the dog, I walk two dogs. It's such a high risk because one of my fears is, you know, walking into it. And it's also dangerous for anyone, really, even a little kid. So I think we've also come to a point where we're starting to understand this integration can even go down a bit to the micro level. So it's not just the macro level, which is... as you said earlier, which is fantastic, but also how are we engaging with smaller parts of our design, the little bits, the grates, the pavement, the water runoff, right?
It's everything together, and that's why we talk about it's accessibility, you know? I mean, it's pedestrian accessibility. I mean, this is one of the things which bothers me most sometimes, you know, driving along streets, and I say driving, I do walk a lot, you know, and it bothers me, you know, this. I remember when I still had young kids in buggies, you know, walking to and from childcare, and your wrists are really hurting simply because you're going up and down over ramps, you know, and you really feel the strain, and it's unnecessary. This is something which can be easily designed into the edge of the curb. You don't need this kind of, you know, approach. But sometimes, and this is another aspect which we need to work on, you know, it's knowledge building and capacity building, you know, across sectors, across, you know. But I was saying, you know, about access, where you see people, you know, a lot of elderly just looking out from windows, watching sort of life, because the level of accessibility is very restricting, you know, and it's across sectors of society. It could be anyone. It could be somebody young, maybe, who for some reason can't drive, you know. It's very, you know, it's not inclusive as an approach. So there are many aspects to it. It's not just linked to, I don't know, not using your car because of greenhouse gas emissions and, you know, or of congestion of the road. There are many aspects to it. So this is why, you know, it's really, and you're right, it goes from the larger scale of planning a network to zooming in and designing, you know, the individual spaces. But what's important is understanding how they fit within the whole network, you know, because then that's where you can really capitalize on the benefits and how you can manage to achieve certain goals.
In fact, you mentioned Project Green, Ambient Malta, Green Infrastructure. We have seen the shift of mandate where I think suddenly the discourse has changed. We want to award sustainability these days. We want to understand which businesses are looking into sustainable materials. For example, construction using sustainable materials, just a small bracket. It's here. Research-wise on campus, we also look at, for example, using certain type of plastic waste so we can incorporate it into concrete and so on. Without getting into that, it's really, what I'm saying is we find that we are constantly searching for solutions that are nature-based, you are right. And I think we're also driving the country. We can be drivers, for example, as academics, we can be drivers.
I agree. Yeah.
And I believe a lot, because this is when you have a class of 30, 60 students, and some of them are always connected to business owners, some of them are daughters and sons of ministers, politicians, and so on. So there's quite a mix in class. And one of the great things is that we see a very huge and rich, diverse range of students with a lot of great ideas sometimes. And one of the questions I always get is, but can you help me cross the bridge, like from my vision to implementation? Because they know that the trade is what it is. And crossing the vision from having that dream, having that idea, and implementing is one big task. And again, I will tie this into some of my questions I have for you in the next part of the program. How do you feel that your mandate gets transferred downwards to the students? Because I know you enjoy a lot of time with your students, tutorials and lecturing. How do you feel? What is the feedback you get at that level?
I think we're seeing a lot of change. First of all, I mean, I see it from when you see then students working later on, or, you know, into, I mean, I teach at different levels. I teach at bachelor and at master level. As you know, at the master level, we have the specialization in urban design. So we start with design workshops where, you know, you have students maybe testing the waters, trying to see if this is something they like. And then when you see them follow through from taking that first, you know, bachelor undergraduate workshop to following through to masters and choosing to do urban design, and seeing them graduate, you know, they can, you know, they can really, they really have that expertise. It's a pleasure. It's a very, like, you know, strong sense of satisfaction, you know, to see that you've, you know, and that they really care about the subject. Also through our teaching, I mean, in our department and cross department really, because at undergraduate we work, you know, collaboratively amongst the departments. We are designing more and more our student workshops with collaborations with these entities that you are mentioning. So more and more the students are, when you say, you know, we're driving change or we're influencing, we've have collaborations with Project Green where we're working on areas that they are interested in. We are also suggesting what the brief is or how the students works, the process. And then the students are, in the first collaboration that we had, are moving on to actually do traineeships and continue working on the projects. And the projects are moving forward to be implemented. So, you know, I think we do have an impact with what we're doing.
Yes, in fact, one of the sessions I was an examiner, mm-hmm. and we had half a panel which was mm-hmm. basically attendees from mm-hmm. one of the government entities, and we also obviously had the academic group. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things is that we enjoyed having this conversation between, yes, this part of your project is implementable, mm-hmm. let's continue mm-hmm. working mm-hmm. on it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that students feel they are being engaged with the reality, because mm-hmm. this is one of the things they love. They love addressing problems. Mm-hmm. They love it. They love solving. And I think it helps them that there is someone higher up mm-hmm. in the strata of society, sort of saying, "Ah, yes, look, your solution fits our problem."
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think it also ties in a lot of what we said earlier: mm-hmm. the macro scale, the micro scale, and our students have time to get into the micro mm-hmm. level of mm-hmm. things. So I think bridging the two starts to become even easier mm-hmm. because even as tutors and examiners, we start to see it take shape. We also have exhibitions. You have had exhibitions with their work, right?
Yes. But I mean, when Project Green first started, they came to us to collaborate. And one of the first things we did was we said, like, look, we have, you know, over the past few years built such a portfolio of projects, you know, the students, of looking at open spaces and redesigning and reimagining our open spaces. You know, if you're interested in collaborating, have a look at what we've been doing. And they were totally on board. And we organized, you know, an exhibition of student work, open to local council as well, and then, you know, there was a discussion. So, you know, we you know, they're interested, and as you said, I mean, the students like seeing that their work is relevant, that somebody is interested. You know, very often sometimes we start to say, but I don't, people might think, okay, university is one thing, you're visionary, you're just thinking, and this is not what happens out there. And I think we're starting to see, you know, that it's not necessarily mm-hmm. the case. You know, it's not just visionary. We do have workshops where we say, look, let's take certain assumptions and mm-hmm. let's deal only with this for now. And let's dream. Let's mm-hmm. try and let's, you know, imagine we don't have these issues. To think a bit, you know, more, give them more freedom. But then as they start to progress, you know, you start getting into, you know, the functionality and you start, there are solutions. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, entities do appreciate that, you know, that inspiration and that innovation. And then maybe, okay, some ideas need to be toned down. But that's how it's, you know, that's how it works.
And we've also had a lot of students who are managing to travel, mm-hmm. so finish off their course here and study and work abroad. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've written quite a lot of reference letters for mm-hmm. students who would like to continue pursuing. I mean, mm-hmm. and the great thing is that they would have built a repertoire, a portfolio mm-hmm. here of mm-hmm. these solutions, nature-based solution, public projects that they use to build their career further. So I think we've managed to mix the two. We've managed to come up with the vision, the theory behind the vision, but also we're opening their eyes to see the implementable parts mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. of those projects. Mm-hmm. And by engaging with government entities, mm-hmm. We're exposing each mm-hmm. other. So government entities are exposing themselves to what we can provide. And we're kind of understanding our needs and trying to offer mm-hmm. that exchange.
Yes.
So I think it's kind of working. Very good. So, Sara, thank you for this great intervention so far. We're going to be going on to a little short break very soon. Studio here with me, I have Dr. Sara Scheiber. She's here today talking to us about her work and how this is slowly helping Malta see the need and understanding what we can do with our public spaces and how we can engage them further. And I look forward to the next part of the program. See you shortly. I am Professor Rebecca Daligonzi.
Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world? Or do you need more? Is there something else you're searching for? I'll fall in all the good times I find myself longing for change, and in the bad times I fear myself.
tired trying to fill that void? Or do you need more? Ain't it hard keeping it so hardcore? I'm falling. In all the good times I find myself times I fear myself.
Fl-studio u l-program Vjaġġ Mara Zazua. Jien il-professur Rebecca Dal-Gonzi l-lum qed nitkellmu fuq il-proġetti fil-spazji pubbliċi. Hawnhekk għandi l-Dr. Sara Scheiber u l-program l-lum qed ikonna nagħduh bl-Ingliż. Mela, Sara, thank you for your time. As always, I love doing that because I know everybody's really busy to get onto the program, so I'm very grateful. We've mentioned quite a number of things in the first half of the program that were quite exciting. I mean, we spoke about successful projects. We talked about macro-scale planning, micro-scale planning. We touched a bit upon research, students at university. So quite a number of topics were discussed. One of the things that I'd like to relate to all that you've said before is your work in the NGO. As I mentioned before, I mean, Sara, you'll see her walking the streets collecting data with papers in her hand and asking your questions. Sometimes that's how I meet her myself. She's a very hands-on and a very practical woman as an academic, as a researcher, as an architect. So it's great to have people like you around. Could you tell us a bit about this vision, how it started, how are you involved, and where are you at right now?
Mm-hmm.
That would be great.
Okay, so the volunteer organization is called Daura Madwarna, Connecting People, Connecting Places. It originated really through a number of, getting to know people through different activities and realizing that there were a number of people who were interested, like-minded individuals who are interested in, you know, contributing to change in reality. And there was a time, again, it was about the time of the pandemic, where you started to see people maybe proposing visionary ideas, or we should do this, or maybe this is not ideal, why aren't we doing this? And these ideas sometimes, you know, they get some attention on social media and they're thrown around, but then, you know, things tend to die down again. And together with some other colleagues, sort of we had got together and we thought, you know, we really should create a stronger network of people and try and facilitate, maybe create some sort of platform. The idea originated a platform, a network of professionals from different fields in reality, and build on this interdisciplinarity to try and create momentum and to try and create a platform where for discussion, for constructive discussion, you know, where we can maybe be visionary, you know, and where when people are suggesting things, it works together to have more strength, you know. And at the time I was finishing my PhD, another thing which was coming out of the research was the need to maybe work more with communities and empower people. This idea that I mentioned before of knowledge building and capacity building, and the need for that, you know, across sectors of society, across professionals even, you know. And that a lot of the times things happen because there is maybe a lack of awareness, because maybe this is not an area we're used to working in. And so this is where the idea started, that really there would be this kind of platform where we would work on different aspects, whether it's creating more awareness, whether it's trying to engage more with communities and empower communities, but the ultimate aim being to bring together people who are interested in transforming our open exactly. spaces mm-hmm. and creating change when mm-hmm. it comes to how we think about our urban areas, basically, mm-hmm. and having a new a vision, you know, and trying to drive this.
I mean, when something's created bottom up, so when an NGO comes together because it's not handed over but kind of mm-hmm. grown in this way, it starts to take on a shape where it's, you know, fitting in gaps and trying to solve problems. Like I said, problem solving mm-hmm. is the rule of the day. And I find that one of the things we can enjoy most is the satisfaction of seeing the results that pertain mm-hmm. to a study and then implement it mm-hmm. outwards and meet the needs of people.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is, we're looking at different age groups that have different needs. Mm-hmm. So you've got kids' needs mm-hmm. and then you've got teen needs and young adults' needs and then young couples' needs and children's needs and elderly needs, and all coming together to understand exactly what we can offer at every step of the way. Because mm-hmm. I think this is what Malta's really mm-hmm. trying to do in mm-hmm. its limited capacity of mm-hmm. of land.
Yes.
And one of the things we've also understood, and we touched upon this earlier in the program, is understanding what we've enjoyed and experienced ourselves, even abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And moving home back to understand, all right, how can this work better? How can I use what I've learned and apply it here? One of the things you mentioned, for example, the proportionality between the city mm-hmm. and the natural landscape.
Yes.
In the Netherlands, there's this constant yes. merging. And it is very natural, yes. in fact, because yes. it was one of the places I loved very much. So mm-hmm. Where did the NGO take you mm-hmm. and how did it help you perhaps start to implement solutions that are closer to home, mm-hmm. you know, less perhaps very policy oriented, mm-hmm. but something more towards community based, yes. more bottom up?
Yes, I mean, I think the NGO works on different levels. So it works very bottom up, but also we try to work with lots of different stakeholders. So collaboration and trying to create networks, you know, and act as a catalyst is one of the, you know, one of the things we try to do. In fact, one of the first things we did was, and like you said, it was very bottom up. So we weren't an NGO as such officially for the first couple of years. I think we've been officially registered as an association for a year now. we started in 2020 about. And so one of the first things we had done at the time was to create a position paper, we called it, on networks of green open spaces, uh-huh. Where we tried to, in very, you know, not to say basic terms, but in an easy to you know, very legible kind and visual way, you know, explain what it means to think about having nature in our urban
yes.
areas.
Yes, of course.
And, you know, what the key principles might be, what we already know about Malta. So we also collated in this different research, you know, not just mine, but other. There were various academics and there are working, you know, maybe things linked to mobility, how these integrate these different principles, what it means to think about different types of open spaces, because this is another thing. thing, you know, that we don't really have an official way of classifying, let's say, our open spaces locally. Mm-hmm. And why this is important, because not every space should be the same. And like you were saying, we need to address different user groups, you know, and we want to create spaces which have different experiences and they should relate to each other. So it was this paper, and it also linked to mobility, this understanding that, yes, maybe this is visionary, and yes, we need to think differently about mobility. But at the time, we actually have, and we still have, a transport master plan, a national transport master plan, which advocates for a change in direction of how we move around and how we start to use more sustainable modes. Whereas when it came to planning of open spaces, we still don't have a strategic plan on how, and this is what we're trying to advocate as well. And we use this position paper to, I mean, we held a number of presentations with different ministries and different entities to advocate and lobby, maybe. I mean, we think our sort of vision is to act in a very proactive way. So we want to, you know, we want to talk about what can be done, you know, and how, and even in the kind of events and activities that we organize. So moving on from this, we organized webinars as well. It was the pandemic at the time, so we would invite different stakeholders to discuss, you know, different topics and different themes. And these are recorded as well. They can be found on YouTube. So like that, you also have a documentation, you know, and that's something, like I was mentioning before, you know, there are ideas, there are things, but there isn't like a repository of where, you know, this all goes. Uh-huh. So in fact, even our website, we launched our website, you know, even before becoming an association, because that was one of the key things. And on there we have a toolkit as well, where we try to put, you know, certain, whether they're guidelines or interesting papers or videos, just easy to access, mm-hmm. you know, information, yes. When it comes to, I don't know, good design of public space, the concept of placemaking, which is about engaging with communities. And I mean, and then moving on from that, we also started to try and organize workshops with communities and then really mm-hmm. go out into. So we try to do things at, yes. at different levels. And yes. everyone in the organization has different interests. So this is where yes. it comes from. It really comes from sitting around the table and having, you know, different people from the network. You
exactly.
know,
and it
say what they are interested in.
Exactly, and it says which it also makes sense to say which hat you're actually wearing, mm-hmm. not as a new, mm-hmm. but when we're sitting around the table, what hat are you wearing and what agenda are you trying to bring to the mm-hmm. table? So mm-hmm. what you're saying is kind of a very clear, straight mandate. Listen, we're intending to improve spaces mm-hmm. and make people more aware of mm-hmm. what they need, mm-hmm. what their well-being is, mm-hmm. kind of thing. But I'm sure that many out there hearing today's program are saying, okay, but what about me? Have mm-hmm. I been forgotten? Mm-hmm. Like, I live in a very polluted area, mm-hmm. or I live in a very busy area, mm-hmm. or what are people, you know, how mm-hmm. is the nation looking after me? Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that helps create happy and stronger communities is when people feel they are being cared for, yes. when they are being feeling safe. And I think an NGO like yourself has put that as a primary focus. Mm-hmm. How are we going to improve the well-being, the safety, the health awareness for our users, mm-hmm. clients, stakeholders, whatever you'd like to call them. And I think that helps also give people a sense of purpose, mm-hmm. a sense of identity. Because mm-hmm. I think also there's a big thing. When people feel well mm-hmm. and they feel valued, and then their identity is more solid, more stable, mm-hmm. stronger. Mm-hmm. This comes even from the fact when we care very much for our schools, the way we design our schools, if mm-hmm. we incorporate nature into our schools, if mm-hmm. we give students the facility to be able to sketch, play, have their breaks in nature, you know, build spaces, mm-hmm, not mm-hmm. not just a concrete ground, you yes, know what yes, I mean, yes, which yes. isn't yes. it's not soft material, yeah. it's, you know, it's mm-hmm. hard material. So even these small steps that we take towards building our environments which are closer to nature-based solutions mm-hmm. means that we are also offering a sense of well-being mm-hmm. constantly. And I think that comes across very clearly. And how do you see this grow? So I'm sure that if we met someone on the street tomorrow, the first thing they would tell us is mm-hmm. what's going to happen with the development of Molten, how are we going to feel that mm-hmm. we're going to have more nature-spaced mm-hmm. Ideas infiltrating our cities, our rural towns. Where would you take us? How would you guide us through that?
I mean, I think one of the challenges and barriers we often have is, to put it bluntly, is society itself, you know. Sometimes, you know, when you're trying to propose certain interventions, it requires a change in how we're used to seeing things. And this doesn't necessarily, you know, go down let's say, well. And, you know, I think we have to change the narrative a bit in terms of, you know, when you're saying, because, you know, we have to feel cared for, or, you know, as maybe our area has been forgotten. But what we try to get across, even as a, you know, as an organization, or maybe and through certain projects, is we as a society, we can maybe take more ownership of what's happening around us. You know, we can try and engage with what's happening around us. It can even be simply by, you know, culture. We don't. It's like activism is something maybe seen a bit negatively. You know, whereas really, for me to take an interest in a public space, and some of the projects we've worked on, for example, in Senglia, we worked there because there was an interest from the community in certain spaces which had potential. You know, and you know, they started caring for the community. And all what we did, you know, as an organization is really facilitate that. And sometimes it's just about facilitating and trying to, you know, even like just work with the local council who maybe don't know exactly, you know, necessarily what's the best way, or the community, how to go around things. You know, very often people, you know, come in to say, okay, but where do we start? I'm interested in doing something. In fact, last year we had a... we managed to obtain some funding. It was our first fund being registered as an association, and we organized a placemaking knowledge exchange. So we brought down somebody from Norway to provide training, and we had a 1-day workshop where we invited different stakeholders from entities. We had academia, we had students, we had government entities, we had community people from residence groups presenting what they are already doing, and we had a very interesting, you know, workshop day about how, you know, to placemaking basically refers to having, you know, maybe engaging with communities in public space to create, you know, to transform what otherwise would be just a space, which nobody necessarily, you know, engages with or doesn't have value for the community. So we had this, you know, it was knowledge building. And then we had a public talk as well. In fact, it's recorded and it's online, so people can access actually this on our YouTube as well, this video recording of this foreign speaker that we brought down to talk about placemaking. And one of the things she had said is, you know, you need to start in your own communities. One of the things that we found when working with communities, it's a very tricky situation in terms of where do you intervene, where do you step back, how do, ultimately you have to let the community, you know, you can't allow the community to do what they want to do, you know. So it's very difficult to say, you know, to what extent you intervene or go in, and then at which point you step back, you know, and when...
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, this is all really good. I mean, the word facilitates is quite a key, because in reality, we think we need to solve everything, but all we need to do sometimes is just facilitate. It means be the glue kind of between an idea and a citizen or a participatory group, that kind of... One helps the other work and vice versa. Yeah. And it doesn't mean having to create everything from scratch, but just literally putting resources together to fill the gaps.
Yes. And pointing them in the right direction of where to find certain information, you know, or what's next. You know, the foreign speaker that we broke down, her name was Helen Gullis from Fragment. And she spoke about, you know, if you want to start somewhere, actually start in your own communities, you know, start and see what you can do and what you can contribute. And I think this is on a very small scale. I mean, in terms of even just saying, you know, sometimes we also talk about maybe another terminology is tactical urbanism, you know, saying where we pilot things, we try to do things just to see how it works, you know, and how it goes down. But even on a larger scale, you know, sometimes there are projects planned, which, like I was saying, require change. And maybe, you know, we need to be the ones as society to say, look, maybe let's not be so, let's try and understand what the aim is. And can we think about, especially when it comes to things such as thinking differently in terms of mobility, you know, and how we're used to always having to go everywhere, you know,
by car.
And the minute we start to see interventions maybe which limit the use of the car, there's a lot of, you know, backlash, which is, you know, while understandable, at the same time, we need to be ready to change our way of life, you know, in certain ways.
Yes.
If we want to see an improvement in the quality of our environment.
Yes, I think one of the things that worked surely are some pedestrianized areas that we never thought would be possible.
Mm-hmm.
places like Sliema, Valletta, mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm, where cars used to pass heavily and now,
yes,
they don't.
Yes.
There was a lot of uproar at the beginning and people took it, you know, mm-hmm, really, really tough. But, I mean,
yes,
the breathability, the usability, the accessibility, mm-hmm, the livability of spaces, yes, that brings, yes, is something priceless. Mm-hmm. And
yes,
the fact that we're making a small sacrifice or making a big sacrifice, some residents probably who live there are making a bigger sacrifice, mm-hmm, than others who aren't, mm-hmm, living there. But I mean, at the end of the day, the benefits of these tough decisions are not even, not they're successfully not even short term, but even long term,
yes,
success.
Yes.
So I think I think it is a nation that has to learn a lot by doing.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're saying,
yes,
this step that all of you took, because you're a group of, how many are you in this NGO? Is it
Originally,
seven, six,
you know,
seven?
We are four on the board, but mm-hmm, we also have a working group of, you know, up to 10 people.
Yeah.
You know, it depends who's interested. You know, at the uh-huh time I'm working on different projects, you know, in terms of active members.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when it comes to, very often it's how we think about our urban areas, you know. We're so used to driving through everywhere.
Yes.
When you think more strategically and when you look at how Malta, you know, how our urban conurbation is and how it actually works as a city, it's possible to redivert, you know, traffic in the same way that you do, you know, abroad in cities. Mm-hmm. In cities abroad, when you approach the urban area, you leave your car somewhere, you know.
Uh-huh.
You leave your car somewhere and, you know, the whatever, parks and rides, there are many ways, you know. It requires intervention, so, you know, things such as parking management. There are restrictions, but we're so used to sometimes in our journey, in our planning, to think, oh my goodness, you know, now what? In reality, there are many urban cores where we don't need to drive through them because now there has been investment in, you know, the national network, the regional infrastructure, and we just need to think differently, especially as visitors, you know, because there can be residential access, you know. I mean, this is the kind of, you know, obviously what we do with students when we assign projects which look holistically, yes, at an area, you know.
It's a very, very valid point, and it brings to mind some of the things we said earlier. I think we're very much used to, as a nation, comfort,
mm-hmm,
in the sense,
yes,
that we like to be comfortable from the minute we leave our door, mm-hmm, to the minute we arrive to the,
yes,
to the destination. Yes. Now, in between, there are a number of steps that need to be taken. So if you want to park your car and it's a flash flood,
mm-hmm,
the last thing you want is to get soaked because the road has flooded.
So
you want to get out of your car, stay dry, pick a shuttle or,
yes,
whatever short-term transport, mm-hmm, mechanism to get to your office, but you want to get there safely,
yes,
without getting soaked. Similar in harsh weather, which is sunny weather, you know,
mm-hmm,
wearing a suit in Malta in August is an absolute,
mm-hmm,
almost impossible, yeah, because you'll end up drenched in a different,
yeah,
way. So I think what we must understand where the population is coming from, and I say this with huge respect to all government entities that are making waves of change, because they are. But I think one of the things is we also need to go a bit down to the micro planning of things, in the sense that, yes, each journey that a person takes, car, change in transport back to office, has to be something that he feels comfortable, she feels comfortable doing till the door of the office. So I think we've also, the negotiations that we need to think about are also, what happens when I stop using my car?
Mm-hmm.
Am I still comfortable? Am I still air-conditioned?
Yes.
Am I still waterproof?
But we also have to try and appreciate, you know, the level of comfort, which is, we have to create a balance between maybe this level of comfort, which is unsustainable, to put it, you know. You know, when I lived in the Netherlands, you know, I always say this, you know, I had a time when I was unwell and when, you know, there was no amount of persuading that I was going to do with the person on the phone. I literally had to get on my bike with a fever and go to the doctor's office in the rain because, you know, everyone had wet feet, which is what she told me. So, you know, I'm not saying we have to go to that extreme, but, you know,
but
the fact that maybe,
other,
you,
yes,
know,
yes,
I
yes,
have to, you know, I don't necessarily assume that I can easily park my car, you know, extremely in front of where I want to be for a simple 5 minute, you know, or for commuting, you know, an 8 hour work day where I literally spend 8 hours at the office and I don't move. And I insist, you know, on filling up that parking space, maybe, you know, whereas no, I can easily park somewhere else, you know, get a shuttle and then, you know, and free up that parking space, doesn't have to be there. And if a number of those parking spaces were in there, we can have appropriate footpaths, you know, or we can have a tree which creates that more comfortable microclimate. Yes. So maybe you're not, you know, in summer
drenched
and, you know, so it's everything. It's a balance. And that's what we, I think, need to question, you know, as society. We need to be ready to, rather than just sit back and say, you know what, this isn't working. Yes, it's not working, but what can we do to...
I like to call it the everything solution. I like to preach this with my students. Like, we are all responsible for what's happening. It's not, I'm going to say, you do this and point finger. You know, we're in it together. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the everything that makes it possible. And I think one of the things that perhaps architects have the openness too is that they get involved in different levels of design. So it's not just about, many of us might think that we're sitting behind an office just with a couple of sketches and drawings and that's it. But it's very complicated. And sites are very complicated. What you just mentioned, the planning of roads and networks is very, very complex. And we must also appreciate the fact that when we are catering for traffic flows, for example, or pedestrian flows, we are also allowing access at the same time. So it's working in parallel all the time.
Yes.
It's closing things, but keeping some things open for business continuity purposes, for continuity management purposes. We cannot afford to shut down the country simply by because we're making major change.
No.
So I think that is also in itself a very big challenge. So, and there are a number of projects ongoing right now that are within the complexity of this challenge. So I think one of the things that we have, we keep learning from each other. Let's just say that it's never a fixed, you know, you don't sit for an exam and that's it. But it's a continuous learning curve. Like even when we start to talk about, and we've talked about this in other programs, construction management, for example. And so once the vision is there, the implementation projects, the planning starts, and then you've got the construction management layouts that take time to design and prepare. And they are constantly faced with a lot of reactivity. So sometimes you have unforeseen problems, unforeseen weather conditions, unforeseen change in employees, for example. You could have a catchment of construction workers for a time and suddenly you don't. So the fluctuations in construction can be very, very tedious and demanding, especially when you have very tight time frames, which is something that you're aware of too. So one of the things that we're also juggling, besides the design and the vision, is also the implementation and the construction management framework for all this, which in itself is a huge lesson learned.
Yeah.
And I think you've also experienced, probably when you did your research and collected data from Frontline, you must have heard a number of comments or suggestions from people in the street, just residents. Yeah. You know?
I think one of the things you deal with when you're dealing with public space and why it's so complex is that you have many interests. You have many different agendas, many stakeholders. And that's, again, now whether you're working at a community level or whether you're working, you know, at a more, you know, macro scale, that's our reality, you know, that's what we're working with, trying to bring these different interests together and try to create the right balance. You mentioned access and mobility, you know, sometimes you have to restrict access in order to improve mobility if you are thinking in a more, you know, sustainable way and thinking more long term. And that's the what we have
that's
to
I think
accept,
the key, and that is also something that will help us understand how we want to cater for the changing population. Obviously we are all aware that there's an aging population that we need to keep in mind, kind of, and also raise our young ones to support it, but to respect it, because there's a lot of wisdom there and a lot of respect. And I think we're also nearing a time when our young ones are much more aware than maybe they were aware, let's say, 20, 25 years ago. So things have changed, things are shifting, awareness is needed, and I'm sure that with what you're saying, such awareness programs that you're working on, data that you're collecting, I think would really, really support such initiatives. And I thank you so much for that. So I'm going to have to close the program. Thanks for your time. I think it was something we needed to discuss. It was a topic that has been on my, somewhere here, floating at the back of my mind for quite some time. So I'm very happy you could make it. Today we had Dr. Sarah Scheiber, who is an academic but also a researcher, an architect by profession. And she's here supporting projects related to public spaces. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This is the program Viaj Marazazua. Today we hosted the program in English. I am Professor Rebecca Daligonzi, and I look forward to be with you next week. Thanks.